You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. And if you're like me, you've been feeling a bit burned out lately. Well, maybe more than a bit. Make that burned out to a crisp. And it turns out we're not alone. According to a recent survey from the job site Indeed, more than 52% of respondents reported experiencing burnout in 2021. For journalists like me, that burnout has been due in part from our inability to step away from the news. Between COVID-19, the election, protests against police brutality, and more, journalists have been caught up in an endless cycle of traumatic news for at least more than a year. And that's been forcing some journalists to step down and take a break. Recently, a number of very prominent journalists, from the editorial director of the Texas Tribune to the editor of Wired, announced they'd be leaving their jobs because of burnout. So what can we do to better support people who bring you the news? For that, I'm joined by Bruce Shapiro, the executive director of the DART Center for Journalism and Trauma, a project of Columbia Journalism School. Bruce, great to have you with us.
Very glad to be here, Tanzina.
I don't like to do a lot of navel gazing, and I know that people have many different feelings about the media. I will say, though, that burnout is something that I think a lot of people, whether they work in media or not, are experiencing. But these very high profile, departures, I think, are signaling something that we as journalists need to look at. So let's start with why so many journalists are feeling burnout this year.
Yeah, this is really important. I've, Tanzina, over the last 2 months, I've been spending a lot of time in newsrooms via Zoom talking to journalists about the impact of this period. And a few things are apparent. On the one hand, people who report the news, who produce the news, who are in front of the camera and behind the desk, have the same very challenging big stresses and fears that the rest of society has. We are citizens and we are afraid of COVID-19. We're frustrated by working at home. We are having to manage boundaries like everybody else. We are fearful for our relatives and people we love. All of that is a kind of open-ended stress in and of itself. But in addition, I think what the public doesn't see is that there have been a couple of other sources of extraordinary open-ended, unremitting stress for the people who carry us the news every day. One of them is that with the arrival of COVID-19 and social distancing and working at home, journalists had to completely reinvent the delivery of news. This part you don't see because the paper still arrives on your desk, the bulletin still arrives in your inbox, we're still on air, but the mechanism for delivery, the process, the workflow had to be completely invented over the last year. And it has been reinvented amid, as you were saying, these unrelenting news cycles filled with violence and trauma. Journalists don't have the option of turning away from the news cycle very much. We are reporting on mass death, whatever our primary beat may be. We're reporting on some aspect of COVID-19. Journalists are reporting on the murder of Mr. Floyd, the murder of Breonna Taylor, all of the events that have transpired since, up to and including Derek Chauvin's trial and conviction this week. We reported on the most violent election season in 100 years in the United States, and have done so in addition amid a time of threat and abuse directed at journalists, at news professionals themselves, and validated from the highest levels of power in the United States. So what journalists have experienced is not just stress, though it is that. It is open-ended, unremitting stress, but it's stress compounded by high levels of trauma exposure, whether what we cover on the street or that steady diet of graphic imagery that people on the desk take in, compounded by threat and abuse, and then further compounded by economic roiling in the industry. And the consequence is not just fatigue and not just some individual cases of burnout or PTSD, but I think a real press freedom issue. You know, when you have American society facing such profound choices in the next year, and the capillary system for democracy itself under such stress. And really, you know, experienced, important senior journalists who are important truth tellers feeling they need to step back. That's a press freedom issue. It's not just about the individual psyches of individual journalists.
There's another thing I would add too, and you mentioned this early in your answer, was how we've had to restructure the way we work. And for a lot of people who aren't as familiar with journalism, or at least, you know, they may be familiar with the traditional newsroom setting from movies where there's, you know, a bunch of us in one big room and some people are, you know, being, you know, editing photos and others are typing away. And there's sort of a hum to a newsroom as we all kind of create this daily report together. That has also been disrupted. I work from a windowless closet, and I've been doing that for almost a year now. I haven't seen my colleagues in person in almost a year and a half. And I wonder if that isolation that some journalists are having to deal with as they process the traumatic news, as they, you know, come out of a administration that called them fake news for 4 years, and as they continue to watch, you know, and really process the traumatic news that we're experiencing, if that isolation is also adding to the burnout, not having your colleagues to just be like, hey, let's go grab a sandwich or something.
You know, it's really quite significant, Tanzina. One thing we know about journalists from 20 years of research that psychologists and neuroscientists have conducted on our tribe is that we are, you know, a pretty resilient group, even when we're covering stories about people like ourselves who are under attack. You know, journalists of color covering police violence against Black Americans, for example. That's a source of mission and motivation. We take care of ourselves pretty well. But the most important predictor of journalists' resilience, of our ability to kind of keep going, is the strength of our collegial support, our social connections, our peer support. And those of us who work in newsrooms get that, you know, every day. Peer support, the collegial connection that helps us maintain a sense of mission, of purpose, of common ethic, is greatly strained by people working at home. By the way, this is not only true, you know, of journalists. The sort of the peer support phenomenon is also true of other frontline and other trauma-facing professions, whether that is firefighters, first responders, or psychotherapists. You know, connection, social connection, is how we metabolize trauma and take care of ourselves. And for so many in the news business, there is this huge confrontation right now with this trauma-drenched news cycle at a time when we have fewer opportunities to engage with our colleagues, whether formally in processing the news or informally over lunch or over dinner afterwards. And it is very costly. And, you know, some news organizations are trying to come to grips with this, but it's a real challenge.
There is also, I think the flip side to that camaraderie is also this sort of very rugged, individualist way that we think of journalists, right? That these should be, you know, we're out there reporting and, you know, we should not have any feelings one way or the other, and we should be able to take on any assignment that is thrown at us. And most of us do that, at, I think, because we love what we do, but there is also a mental health effect that can have. And I'm wondering how receptive newsrooms before this burnout epidemic started were to their reporters and editors talking about mental health, and whether or not you're seeing more receptiveness to that now. Or, I mean, I know that, you know, a lot of journalists are afraid to say, I am struggling, because they feared that they might lose their job.
I mean, historically in the news business, there has been a lot of stigma. There, first of all, is a kind of old news culture that says, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. And there's also, you know, people who get into news are often competitive. We're looking over our shoulders at our colleagues. We're worried about getting the next assignment, and we have a kind of internal stigma as well sometimes about getting help or about talking about these issues. The good news is that there has been a slow-moving but rapidly building now generational change going on in journalism, where first of all, among younger reporters and editors, folks now in their 20s and early 30s, as part of a general generational shift, I think there's a much greater openness to talking about the impact of covering difficult stories. In fact, I now sometimes have to turn my usual rap around, and instead of saying, you know, you need to take this stuff seriously, I'm finding myself reassuring younger journalists that actually we are a resilient profession and our work protects us in a lot of ways. You're not automatically sending yourself down a road to post-traumatic stress disorder by doing journalism, right? But there's this generational change on the one hand. Younger journalists who have spent their undergraduate lives in many cases interrogating trauma in the culture of campuses now are much more open to thinking about this. And we also have seen some important major news organizations really undertake significant initiatives in this area. Reuters has a peer support system where a journalist or two in every bureau and office is trained up to be a good colleague to others. Parts of NPR do this. The Australian Broadcasting Corporation does this. And I have just seen over the last year, based on requests to my shop, the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma, we have been asked to do briefings in dozens and dozens of newsrooms since the onset of the pandemic. And I do think that everybody from small nonprofit newsrooms to big international broadcasters is struggling to reckon with the challenges of this time. The most important momentum, though, I think, does come from this kind of generational challenge, where you have younger journalists in general saying, hey, you guys have a duty of care. If we're going to cover difficult events and do it well, you know, we need to be taken care of. And there's also a demand, I think, from younger reporters to particularly take identity into account. And this tracks with research. We know from many years of research into journalists that when we cover stories that are drenched in trauma involving people who we identify with closely, that's a risk factor for post-traumatic stress, burnout, other psychological injury. It doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. You may need to up the self-care, or there may be some news organization role in pacing the work, but it is a conversation we need to lean into and understand, as young journalists, I think, are insisting now, that identity is never neutral. It's a source of both insight and strength and vulnerability, and we need to understand that.
We're seeing a number of prominent newsroom employees, both at the Texas Tribune and at Wired, in the past 2 weeks, announced that they are stepping down. What struck me is that these are three women, high-ranking women in newsrooms. Two of the women we're talking about are also women of color. What does it signify? And those women at the Texas Tribune have been in the job for about a year. What does it mean, Bruce, to lose talent at that level?
I think
to burnout in particular. Yeah,
first of all, I think for individual newsrooms, it's an immediate loss in the middle of intersecting national crises to lose gifted, energetic, deeply committed journalists is just always a problem. Secondly, for those teams in particular, but for the profession as a whole, this is really quite consequential because we're not just losing, in these cases, individual journalists. We're losing mentors and leaders, people who are the bridge builders between generations of journalists who carry the experience and wisdom of past crises, or who, as women in journalism, have broken through various kinds of glass ceilings and been role models for younger colleagues. And I worry very much about a loss of mentorship and a loss of leadership at a time of great roiling in the news business. It really can be costly to people's news judgment. It means that younger journalists may be stuck reinventing the wheel. And also that some of the change that has happened in making newsrooms slightly better places to work over the last decade or so may be lost as these committed leaders leave and other economic pressures come in that may cause newsrooms to shrink, workloads to go up. There's a lot of dangerous stuff going on out there. And again, this I don't think should be understood as media navel gazing. This is about a threat to press freedom. A gifted journalist or a gifted editor or producer who leaves their job because of the impact of post-traumatic stress disorder, or who leaves their job because of burnout, and burnout is not just being extra tired, it's a real collapse of capacity that's recognized by the World Health Organization as an occupational mental health issue. If we're losing people to post-traumatic stress disorder, to burnout, to other kinds of psychological injury, that's a kind of censorship as effectively as if a reporter was jailed or shut down. We're deprived of their insight, deprived of their voice, deprived of their bearing witness to the times we live in. That's a big loss for American society at a time when we're really navigating a big national argument about the future of America.
You mentioned a couple things, burnout and PTSD. You said burnout is the is recognized by as an issue that is an occupational mental health issue. How do we define burnout versus PTSD for journalists right now? Because I think often we think of post-traumatic stress disorder as something that only happens to journalists who are in war zones covering conflict. And we think about burnout as something I think that happens to people who work in offices who are particularly tired. Why are those not accurate descriptors of what these two things mean? And then how do we define for journalists, how can someone say, okay, I have PTSD or I have burnout?
So I think we are talking about two different issues, which at the moment are intersecting because of this unrelenting news cycle that we've been talking about for journalists. You know, burnout in any profession, in medicine, in law enforcement, in offices, is simply a condition that results from chronic workplace stress that becomes unmanageable. That is the definition of burnout. It's about the brain's incapacity, even in high stress performing professions like journalism, the brain's fatigue eventually. You know, an Olympic athlete, a marathon runner, will eventually fatigue. And journalists are no different. Our performance goes up as stress goes up, as deadline gets closer. But if stress is open-ended and unremitting, we get tired, performance drops off, and at the far end of that, you get burnout, this radical loss of capacity, which is all about occupational stress. And it's as true of people in the field as it is of people behind the desk. Burnout is purely about unrelenting, open-ended and unremitting stress, which now in journalism is coming from several directions at once. The pandemic, the news cycle, the threats to journalists, the economic pressures of the industry. Those are huge stresses that are just ongoing. Trauma, post-traumatic stress disorder is something different. Post-traumatic stress disorder comes from the direct exposure to or the secondary handling of empathetic connection in interviews or dealing with images involving overwhelming violence or cruelty or death or chronic threat. And it has to do with the brain and body staying in a kind of a permanent alarm state in which there are characteristic psychological changes. Traumatic memories that come back at us when we don't want and that are interfering, a sense of anxiety, arousal, being unable to concentrate, get to sleep, or the other direction, people who become numb and avoidant, or whose worldview becomes very dark. Those are profound psychological changes that begin with our biological response to fear and threat. And what we know from research into journalists is that our profession is exposed through to far more trauma than the general public, and even more than some other frontline professions. We obviously, reporters who are covering war are exposed to a lot of trauma, but so are reporters who cover violent street demonstrations or confrontations with the police. So are reporters who cover crime and fires, but so are journalists who never leave the desk, who are dealing with a steady diet of graphic imagery, and we can't look away because it's our job. Think of, you know, any of the horrible police violence videos over the course of the last week. They're tough for all citizens to look at, you know, particularly people of color, particularly people who identify with the victims in those videos. But for journalists and for editors and producers, what the public doesn't see is that we have to view those, decide which ones to use, verify them, edit them, run them past other editors and producers, constantly re-edit them. There's a whole process, which means that a lot of people who never leave the desk are dealing with a steady diet of graphic imagery, a steady diet of distressing information, which eventually can overtop your sort of personal dam, your personal levee, just as much as frontline trauma exposure. We know that, and that these mechanisms how the brain responds, you know, are very close to what we use as journalists every day in our work. We rely on being able to be present in the moment, not overwhelmed by last year's police shooting video when we're trying to do today's story about garlic. We rely on being able to focus, to put together complex information, to get along with colleagues, to make empathetic connection with sources, with audiences, with colleagues. This is so central to news. And when an overload of trauma, either in the short run through a direct exposure to terrifying events like those journalists, courageous journalists who covered the insurrection at the Capitol on January 6th, or the steady drip, drip, drip that comes from covering one murder trial after another, one police shooting video after another, dealing with the graphic imagery one day after another, after another, after another, one COVID death after another, after another, that can eventually overtake journalists' capacities in a profound way. It's a conversation that we've been having in journalism slowly for the last 20 years. I think it's rapidly accelerating this year as the toll of the year is becoming apparent.
So let's talk about what can be done, Bruce. What are newsrooms doing? My thought is that it's going to take more than offering for the issues that we're talking about, for the PTSD, for the burnout. It's going to take more than a day off here and there. I wonder what your thoughts are on really restructuring our jobs, or what is it that can be done, because the news cycle is the news cycle and it's not going to change because we would like it to change. So something has to give in order to retain the majority of the people I know that are in this business, and I'm sure you feel the same, are doing it because they love the news, they love journalism, they love supporting and going through all of the things that you said to provide the public with an accurate report. But that's largely becoming unsustainable. So what is it that news organizations can do?
And let's stipulate that, you know, that on one level, there's no Band-Aid for this, that the news is going to remain a challenging place to do work, and an important place to do work. These are occupational health hazards of being in the news business, and we need to be frank about that. I do think there's a lot that the industry can do. We can, first of all, institute an open conversation about this within every single news organization that begins with the top and isn't just about, oh, there's been a crisis, here are the counselors, but rather, how do we take care of ourselves? Big news companies can adopt very effective peer support systems where journalists are trained to be good colleagues to one another. I think that's important. Make sure that there are good pathways to getting professional help for those colleagues who need it. And there's actually a growing pool of clinicians around the country who've come to be interested in the issues facing journalists in particular. That's all really important. But I think the big thing, which is what you referred to, is that we need to be looking hard at our workflows and our expectations. You know, coming out of this, in the pandemic, over the course of the last year, one of the things I've been moved by and excited by has been the incredible energy and innovation that reporters and producers and teams in every part of the news business, from little tiny public radio affiliates and nonprofit newsrooms up to these big news organizations, people reinvented their work with incredible alacrity over the last year. American journalism met the crisis in a very impressive way, kind of functionally. But now we need to say, well, what is sustainable? We need to go from crisis to sustainability, because clearly, first of all, we're going to continue to be working in a distanced way. Secondly, the news cycle is going to continue to be violent and roiling for the foreseeable future. So news organizations have a duty of care. They have an obligation which goes beyond providing counseling. It has to do with looking at workflows and making sure that their teams are adequately staffed. They have to do with kind of coming up with strategic plans that take into account the functional, biological need of every news professional to have downtime, to have neurological recovery time, which is what the brain needs. And that's not just the 3 weeks of vacation that someday we may get to take when we can get on airplanes again. It's about, how do people have opportunity within a given day to change the tasks? Are those who manage graphic imagery able to pace the work, distribute it among teams, not just be forced to plunge themselves into it for days or weeks on end? Are teams that cover mayhem and violence, who are really good at it, nonetheless able to use different muscles, get different kinds of assignments so that no one is completely exhausted all the time? This kind of rethinking of how the news gets assigned and done isn't a matter of kind of a new agey, let's be nice to one another. It's about what's necessary as an occupational health obligation, like just like putting a flak jacket on a journalist who's covering war. We need to be thinking about what kinds of psychological, of neurological protection are going to enable reporters, editors, producers to keep doing their tasks, to maintain their resilience and not be a kind of casualty list of burnout candidates who are leaving the profession in large numbers, which is so dangerous to the profession and so dangerous to American democracy.
Bruce Shapiro is the executive director of the DART Center for Journalism and Trauma. Bruce, thank you so much.
Thank you. Very glad to be here.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.